KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. As search and rescue efforts continue at Butte County's campfire, which is now 100% contained, Interior Secretary Ryan Zinke visited the site yesterday. We'll get an update on rescue efforts and discuss how the state and federal governments are at odds on ideas of forest management and what that means for California. Then at 9:30, a new comprehensive climate report released last week predicts that global warming could have a significant impact on the U.S. economy. Asked on Monday about the economic predictions in the report, President Trump brushed it off.
I don't believe it. No, I don't believe it.
We'll take a closer look at the report's findings and what we can do to adapt to a changing climate. And that's next, after this. Welcome to this morning's forum. I'm Michael Krasny. Yesterday, Interior Secretary Ryan Zinke visited Paradise, the Northern California town devastated by the deadly campfire. Zinke's second visit to the area came after he made comments linking radical environmental groups and forest mismanagement to California's wildfires. In this segment, we'll get an update on search and rescue efforts in Paradise and dig into the very different stances California officials and the Trump administration have on what is contributing to California's fierce wildfires. Joining us from up in Marysville is John Sepulvedo. He was in Butte County yesterday, and he's the host of the California Report. Welcome, John.
Hi, Michael.
Hi to you. Hi also to Greg Alplett, who's also joining us. Greg Alplett is Senior Science Director of the Wilderness Society, and welcome to the program, Greg Alplett.
Nice to be here.
Good to have you here. John, let me begin with you, and let's talk about what we know in terms of search and rescue at this point. Where are we?
Well, 88 people have been killed, confirmed killed. The vast majority of these are people who were elderly and had a very difficult time leaving their homes. I think one of the most upsetting things I'm going to remember, I know for the rest of my life, is that two people at the time who was believed to be found in a home huddled together. It turned out there were three people, and it just happened to be that KQED and myself, that we were there on the scene when these people were discovered over the weekend, the Thanksgiving weekend. So it's just very, very sobering. I don't think anyone has fully, myself included, has fully articulated the scope of this fire. I've seen some people try it with maps to overlay it and show how big it would burn. You know, it would be bigger than Washington, D.C., or if you put it in size, it would be bigger than this city or that. But the destruction is total, and the amount of mourning that has happened and that will continue to happen can't be measured in how many people are displaced, which right now is anywhere between 17 and 30,000, depending on which figure you go with. It can't be measured in the economic loss, which is going to be in the billions. And it can't be measured in the rebuilding time, or even when they think that it's going to be reopened, which is, you know, Paradise might not be open for months before people are able to come back. This is a catastrophic loss, the likes of which our society have never seen by fire. And that's not me saying that. That's Ryan Zinke saying this, who, as you just noted, a few days ago, said that these fires were created by radical environmentalists. It doesn't matter which political side you are on or what your environmental outlook is, whether you accept scientific consensus or not. The scope of this fire is a huge alarm for anyone. So that is not something that can necessarily be measured or even relayed over the radio right now.
Well, you say immeasurable and words like catastrophic. It's monumental. And I'm wondering at this point, when I ask about search and rescue, you have to perhaps concede the notion that some of these people are simply never going to be located or never going to be found. I mean, that's the most grim and sad thing that we have right now to wrestle with.
And it also shows about the, and you're absolutely right about that. And those are for people in house situation. Those are for people who have family members who are calling them lost. But Michael, there's also this area was there were pockets of it that were incredibly poor, And these were people who already lived on the margins. These were people who did not have that safety network of family or friends, perhaps, who had moved out there to be socially isolated. And there was Michelle Wiley, KQED's Michelle Wiley, and myself were out just a few days ago, and we saw an incredible homeless encampment that was in the woods, completely burned. And you have to ask yourself, how many of those people are going to be reported? So not only are you absolutely right that some remains that were, you know, some missing people who were reported, they will never be found. But there are going to be others who we didn't even know were gone in the first place. And again, it's a comment of where we're at in our society at this moment.
What about those who are displaced? I know they had a number of people in various shelters and tents, people living in cars and vans. Can you update us on what we're seeing now?
So one of the really good things is I'm talking to you right now from Marysville, which is about an hour or so south of Paradise. That's a really good thing because that means that people are transitioning from tents and such into hotels. That's why I couldn't find a hotel. That's why I had to come an hour south. And that little anecdote kind of helps encapsulate what we're seeing across the board, which is that, and I hate to say this, but despite of the federal government, not because of it, people are finding places to survive and live. We're hearing all kinds of stories of people, you know, finding new hotels that they're in. We're hearing great stories of families who, you know, have been able to find housing within an hour of their commute so that if they have a job in Chico or nearby somewhere in Butte County, they can get housed. We know that the shelter numbers are dwindling, but we also know that the people who are remaining in the tents, the people who are remaining at the shelters, again, those are the hardest of the hardcore cases because, again, they often don't have that social safety net or they don't have as complete as a safety net, or for one reason or another, they're not able to get into that housing. So that is a real crisis. And at this moment, it does not appear to be a crisis that the federal government in particular, it's FEMA's job to find housing for people, and it is not one in which they are moving quickly.
Talking about the Butte County campfire and can get into conflicting state and federal ideas about how forests should be managed, John Sepulveda with us, host of the California Report, who's been reporting from Camp Fire. Anxiety at this point about mudslide worry, John? I mean, debris and ashes could be certainly toxic with the rains.
Yeah, there is concern about that. And what was, you know, what was one of the most surreal things was the ash was creating this foam in the rain, and it was running off the hillsides. And so it looked like if you put dishwashing soap into your sink and you just kind of let it run overflow, and it looked like that. It had this real surreal quality to it. But when you saw it, you knew that there could, and most likely was, potentially hazardous things there. So that's created a real problem. The other thing is sinkholes. My colleague Tess Viglin, who is working for North State Public Radio, our sister station there, she reported that some of these searchers and these rescuers, they're actually falling into underground septic tanks that nobody knew was there because of the – I mean, can you imagine, like, you're going through this awful stuff, you're looking for human remains, and then just to add to that, you fall into, you know, a waste tank. So that's really concerning. It's only been a handful of cases, but it gives you the idea of we don't know what's underneath our feet. Not even the most educated, being that these search and rescue folks, know what's under our feet. And so there is concern about what that's going to do to the environment. But I will say, overall, right now, the landslides, the mudslides, we didn't see that materialize. We did see it make it harder for searchers to go. And as you know, KQED's Polly Stryker, who was up there, she reported about the trees being felled because the danger of loose tree roots and the rest, trees that were marginal in the fire afterwards, you know, became a lot more unstable. And that creates problems for two things. One, it creates problems just in general for, like, roadways. Trees can fall on the road. Trees can fall. And the other thing, Michael, which I didn't know until this, just a brief aside, trees don't make a sound for the most part when they fall. It's really eerie. Like, they just kind of lean over, and before you know it, they're on the ground. which is really interesting and very scary if you're a search and rescuer or if you're an electric worker, because all of a sudden you're doing your job and then that tree just falls on you or falls near you. So that was one of the big concerns, was making sure that they get all those loose trees after this rain. But besides that, right now, we're not looking down that way. Now, I will say again, the environmental loss because of the heat of this fire, at least 1,250 degrees in many places as it burned, has created a real mess, a toxic mess. And again, that goes to why it's going to be up to months before people can return to paradise.
Well, you had alluded before, and I want to go into this in some depth with Greg Alplett, who's also with us from the Wilderness Society, but alluded to Secretary Interior Zinke's visit yesterday. And could you just give us an encapsulated sense of what the conversation was like between him and state officials?
It was like, so my mom and my grandma didn't get along when we were growing up. And one would, during Thanksgiving, one would say one thing and one would say the other. And it was like they were talking over each other, telling the same story, but in two completely different ways, not acknowledging that the other person existed. That's what it was like. It was surreal. The federal government would say one thing about thinning forests and about how, and when they say thinning forests, what they mean is that they would open it up to logging, something that both Zinke and, we should say, the Secretary of Agriculture, Sonny Perdue, is a big proponent of. And we shouldn't forget that Sonny Perdue comes from Georgia, which is, you know, the corporate headquarters for Georgia Pacific, the paper company. He's had strong ties with that company, and this is regulation that they've wanted to see for many, many years, going way beyond these fires. And it's about this basic idea that the logging companies actually do a better job of managing the forest, because they're helping to keep the fuel low. When they say they want to clear fuel, what they mean is they want to get trees from the forest into the various products that depend on wood. And that's what they talked about. And it was, you know, you would hear from Congressman Doug LaMalfa, who represents this area, a Republican, and he would talk about making sure that the fuel was lesser in forest than it is now, and making sure that these trees were properly thinned. Then you would hear from a state official who would talk about, we need to recognize climate change and have a holistic approach. And they were both saying the same things. They were both saying worst fire ever. They were both saying that this is the new normal. They were both saying that there's low humidity. They were both acknowledging that the climate is changing, but they had completely different worldviews when it came to actually interacting, or when it came to fixing this. And it was surreal to watch the federal government say one thing and then the state government say something, a completely different prescription, both on the same table, but without acknowledging that the other one had just said the exact counter to what the one before them said, if that makes sense.
That makes sense. I mean, it's nonsensical, but it makes sense in light of, the story. I think the instructive story you told about your mother and your grandmother. We're talking, of course, about the ongoing struggle to get things right up north in Butte County. And I wanted to bring Greg Alplett into this. Again, he's Senior Science Director of the Wilderness Society. And I should mention here that, Greg Alplett, that there is a farm bill that's been touted by Ryan Zinke, which also includes, more logs for the timber industry and so forth. And there was talk by Secretary Zinke about the fact, as he saw it, of radical environmentalists being behind this, not only to say what we've been talking about, that is mismanagement of forest things. How do you see it? I mean, particularly in light of the fact that most of the California officials simply don't see it that way. Zinke sees it.
Yeah, it's disconcerting to hear John's report, but I can't say I'm surprised. For one thing, California has acknowledged the situation for a long time, and actually has developed an amazingly comprehensive program that they're just beginning to implement to try to address the situation in the forest. But Secretary Zinke is really just the latest in a long line of politicians who have sought to capitalize on public concern in the wake of fire to try to reduce environmental safeguards and make it easier to log. I've seen this in my career going back a quarter century. In this case, the Farm Bill contains provisions that were proposed by the timber industry to eliminate the kind of environmental review that we have had governing our forest management for really since 1970.
I think, as you're intimating, that's been true with a lot of environmental bills, hasn't it? Getting rid of environmental review or getting rid of citizen input even.
Yeah. In fact, the irony is that the National Environmental Policy Act, which is the bill that they're seeking exemptions from, doesn't create any barriers to work in the woods. It just requires that we look before we leap, that we consider the environmental consequences of the proposed actions, and that we bring in the best minds, the experts, and the most concerned members of the public to identify what the potential problems are before we take action.
Greg, speaking of taking action, let me just, before I have you finish that thought, give listeners an opportunity to weigh in here. I want to give the number and invite you, those of you listening, if you have some thoughts about forest management or mismanagement, or if you have questions about the campfire, I want to have you join us. And let me tell you how you can do that right now. Our toll-free number, 866-733-6786. We certainly would like to hear what you have to say or ask. And again, you can join us live at 866-733-6786, or you can email us, forum@kqed.org, or go right to our website, kqed.org/forum. Click on this segment or tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQED Forum. We'll go to your calls and emails forthwith, but please finish your thought, Greg Alpin.
Well, I was just, I would note that, you know, we're not very far removed from the passage of the Omnibus Appropriations Bill earlier in this year, where Congress debated much of these same issues and came to resolution over a set of solutions that gave the agencies the ability to conduct work in the forest, and granted a new, what's called a categorical exclusion, an exemption from the requirements of the National Environmental Policy Act, that that we haven't even had a chance to try to implement. And here, Secretary Zinke and Secretary Perdue are coming back for another bite at the apple to try to expand those exemptions. And to, if you look at the forestry provisions in the Farm Bill in aggregate, they essentially eliminate environmental review for forestry projects. And we just don't think that's wise. We completely agree that there's plenty of work to be done. But the work that needs to be done is not the kind of work that is going to be facilitated by logging large trees. And the secretary has blamed environmentalists for obstructing projects in the woods to protect communities and restore forests. But the kind of work that needs to be done is the thinning of small trees, the removal of brush near communities, the use of prescribed fire, none of which delivers large trees to the mills. And
we've had debates on this, but I think you're saying, aren't you, that shrubs and grasses, the fire fuels are far more important and dangerous in terms of wildfires, not to mention climate change, which we'll get into in the second half of this hour, than when we're talking about trees and removal of trees.
Yeah. I mean, the fires of the last month are a great example. Paradise, the fire that approached Paradise burned through a 10-year-old burn, as I understand. So most of what carried the fire into the town was shrubs recovering from a fire 10 years ago. And all the fires of Southern California are typical of the two fires that burned earlier in chaparral. This is not the kind of for a vegetation that is going to be addressed by relieving the agencies of the requirement to evaluate their environmental effects before logging.
Greg Ablett with us from the Wilderness Society. He's Senior Science Director, also John Sepulveda, host of the California Report, and our opening caller here is Albert. Albert, join us. You're on the air.
Yeah, thank you. A little nervous, first-time caller. I'm a general contractor in Sonoma County. I'm on my second rebuild of a burnt home. I'm right outside a building right outside of Annandale State Park, and I look over the fence at thousands of dead trees that were killed in the last fire we had. And my understanding is that the state is just going to leave them. They're not taking them down. They're not logging them. They're not clearing them out. They just expect them to fall and rot. And I can understand one or two trees that that might be the policy, but I'm just looking at a bunch of dead wood.
Yeah, this is something that's come up numerous occasions. Greg Ablett, I'd like your take on it. I mean, in terms of all those dead trees.
Well, I would start by acknowledging that the dead trees do play an important role in the ecosystem. They secure the soil. They create sites for future germination. They provide homes for wildlife species. So just because a tree is dead doesn't mean it's not an important component of the ecosystem. The other thing that I would note is that there's very little evidence that the trees left in the woods create any future fire hazard. And so the question is only...
No, but they can exacerbate a fire, can't they? I mean, this has been the concern.
They can provide some fuel, but the evidence suggests that future fires in the wake of a previous fire generally carried on the finer fuels, the shrubs and ferns and grasses that come in after fire. So
much more the fire fuel, yeah. Let me thank Albert for his call. I want to get another caller in here while we have a minute. Eric, that's you. Good morning.
Hi. Your guest briefly mentioned this, but it seems to me there's been a lot of discussion about forest management as being key to solving the fire problem in California, but a lot of these fires have burned in environments other than forests. In Chaparral, look at the Woosley fire down in Malibu. I mean, that's not forested at all. And so front and center, we need to be talking about what's common between all these fires. And what's common is that it's hotter and it's drier. And then also ignition sources, and it's a problem of ignition. These are all caused by, or mostly caused by, human ignitions. And so those are the two things that need to be front and center here. The forest management thing is important, but it seems to me a distraction from what's common between all these.
Well, Eric, I thank you for that call. We're going to be talking about the climate change report in the next segment. You've given us a good transition. Quick final word from you on that, though, John Sepulveda. I mean, he's saying that maybe we need to concentrate less on forest management.
I think we need to understand, and this is something every official said, rural, urban, whatever divide existed before, this fire is connecting us in a way unlike we've ever seen. There needs to be a holistic, comprehensive look. This isn't just me saying this. This is every single official. We are in this together.
Good note to end on. Thank you, John Sepulveda. Thank you, Greg Ablett. And when we return, we're going to talk about the climate change report. Stay tuned. That's up ahead. I'm Michael Krasny.